there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 338. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowissogay. And of course, stroll on over to the Facebook, type in thisshowissogay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. Such a fun show for you this week. We must get started with our guest. Calvin Stoll is the Chief Growth Officer at DoSomething.org, an incredible organization that if you don't know it, you should, and by the end of this segment, you will. He previously served as their Director of Digital and Content, and before that, as their Social Media Strategist. The Advocate magazine named him as one of their 40 Under 40 Emerging Leaders, a list we enjoy and celebrate every single year. Calvin has quite the social media following himself, which we are going to talk all about. But before we get to that, Calvin, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Happy New Year to you, sir.
It's been crazy. I don't know where the last year went. It just kind of disappeared, and now we're already in January. I still haven't kind of acclimated yet to the fact that it's 2016. I keep saying 2015 instead of 2016.
Are you a resolutions kind of guy?
No. I learned that if I make a resolution, I won't do it. So
okay.
Like last year, I was like, I'm going to cook more and I'll start on New Year's. I never did it. So I figured if I want to do something, I should probably just like do it now instead of putting it off until January 1st.
There you go. We subscribe to that theory. That's a good one. We like that one.
Yeah.
We have so much to chat about. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. So from our crack research team, we're seeing a New Englander at heart.
Yes. I'm from New Hampshire.
Talk to us about growing up in that New England lifestyle.
Oh, man. Well, I think, you know, a lot of people, when they think of New England, they think of, like, this kind of, like, picturesque-looking, like, Lifetime or Disney Channel original movie of this, like, small town. I grew up in a very small town. It's called Claremont, New Hampshire. The main attraction is the Walmart. And the reason it's the main attraction is because New Hampshire has no sales tax.
Right.
And my town is on the border of Vermont, New Hampshire. So people would drive in to Claremont just to shop at the Walmart and avoid paying taxes. So it's a pretty small town. I think it's, like, maybe 8,000 people,
yeah.
9,000 people. So pretty tiny. Everyone knows everyone there. It's not quite like the beautiful town that you always think of in New England. You have to go a little bit further north for that. But it's cute. I was just back there for Christmas. I see my family pretty much like every Christmas and every Thanksgiving. But the rest of my time I spend in New York City.
Nice. Now, as someone who lived in Brattleboro, Vermont for 6 years, I enjoy that no sales tax in New Hampshire.
Oh, you're from Brattleboro.
I
went to a Vermont Academy.
Nice.
So that's really close to Brattleboro.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the kids were from Brattleboro.
Yeah. We're just a bunch of degenerates there. It's great. It's great.
Bellows Falls is the one that has the reputation. Brattleboro is a nicer version of Bellows Falls.
I love it. Now, we never do this in 7+ years of the show. We usually focus on the guest first. But before we get to you, and we're going to talk all about you, you mentioned your family. Tell everybody about your brother, Craig.
Oh, yes. So my brother is just the most incredible person you'll ever meet. He is an Iraqi war vet. He was over there during the fall of Fallujah, like a really, really scary time to be over there. He came back, and honestly, before he became a Marine, we really didn't have the best relationship.
Mm-hmm.
He's a lot older than me, I think like 8 years older than me. So we were always kind of antagonistic as kids. We'd always fight, like physically, mentally, like everything you could imagine. We were just, you know, like typical brothers, did not get along. That kind of all changed when he joined the Marine Corps, came back, had this kind of new appreciation for the world and for his family. We became really close. He's my best friend now. And it was a weird time in New Hampshire because the governor at the time, Governor Lynch, had run on a campaign saying, you know, marriage equality isn't happening in the state. I'm not going to sign that bill if it comes to my desk. A bill ended up coming to his desk for marriage equality and ended up signing it. And he said, I said I wouldn't sign this, but the majority of the people in the state want marriage equality, and my job is to give the people of the state what they're wanting. Like, that's why I was elected, so I'm
going to
sign it. So immediately following that, the National Organization for Marriage, who I'm sure all your listeners know very well.
They do, yes.
The Maggie Gallaghers and the Brian Browns stormed into New Hampshire. They ran this ad campaign about how, you know, Governor Lynch is a liar and how he betrayed the values of New Hampshire. He lied to the people. New Hampshire has like the largest legislative body of any state. It's really bizarre. New Hampshire politics is very odd. There's way too many elected officials in the state. So it was an election year, and they brought in all this outside money, got all these Tea Party people elected. All the Tea Party people were actually like, you know, jobs, 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 small government, no one said anything about marriage equality.
Right.
They ran a campaign entirely based on this idea of, you know, New Hampshire's, you know, this independent state, we're going to bring back small government, you know, the same things that they always say. The day they get into office and they sweep the election, NOM's campaign was incredibly successful. They got a lot of people elected. They had a super majority at that point of conservatives. But Governor Lynch stayed in office by like 1% of the vote. So he was still the governor. But the day they all got elected, they introduced a bill to actually remove marriage equality from the law in New Hampshire. So it was one of the first states where, you know, it was signed into law, and then there was a law actually out to remove it. So my brother is kind of one of the best allies I think you can have. He was like, well, what can I do about this? And, you know, he's kind of a secret weapon because this is a guy who's an Iraqi war vet. He's also a Republican, where our politics differ. He's a Republican. And so, you know, there was a lot of organizations that were working in New Hampshire figuring out, like, okay, can we win this? And pretty much most of the organizations were like, we can't. This is a supermajority. They are going to get rid of marriage equality, but it's fine because in 5 years, we'll get it back. Like, we'll follow a bunch of other states, and people will see this guy didn't fall there, and we'll get marriage equality back. But some organizations were like, no, like, let's do something. We just need to find the right person. So my brother found my family's hairdresser was telling my brother about this like meetup in the state capitol run by HRC and some other organizations. And my brother drove out there with his wife and was saying, like, you know, what can we do? What kind of, you know, grassroots activism can happen in the state to make sure that marriage equality stays safe? They found out that he was, you know, a conservative Iraqi war vet that wanted to fight for marriage equality. So like, holy like, we got to get this guy out there. We got to get him to meet people. So my brother began this, like, media blitz in the state of New Hampshire, like, you know, debating Brian Brown on, you know, like, I think it was MSNBC or CNN or something, meeting with legislators constantly. And the great thing about, you know, his credentials are no Republican sitting official is ever going to deny an Iraqi war vet a meeting.
Nice.
They're obligated to meet with him and to listen to him. So he would spend his days driving out of the Capitol. I would come visit whenever I could, but I was obviously located in New York at that point. I was already working out here. So he really, I mean, he did. It's not a joke to say 99% of the work in this. I wish I had done more, but I was, you know, stuck in New York City. And they ended up keeping marriage equality as a law, even with a Republican supermajority. So the bill was defeated, which was like the first time that it ever happened.
Yeah.
So thanks to him and the work of so many other people and incredible organizations, there's still marriage equality in New Hampshire. Of course, now, the Supreme Court decision and, you know, all that great stuff. So I can't remember what year that was exactly. It feels like a blur. I think maybe like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But it was. It's really crazy, and I owe him so much because he did it for the love of his brother, which I think is really powerful.
Amazing, amazing. By the way, I'm making a new rule from this episode on forward that every guest story needs to contain the phrase "My family's hairdresser told us that." .. Every story.
I think they actually might listen to this. His name is John Osteen in Windsor, Vermont, and he had a huge role to play.
Yeah.
And fighting for marriage equality in New Hampshire. So shout out to John Austin.
No, it's a rule. It is now a rule on this show. I'm so, and you started it. This is very exciting. It's very exciting. Now, we're going to talk all about Do Something. Before we get there, by the way, I have to highlight, you have some sort of professional connection, which I can't just let slide, to Kids Bop. Is that correct?
Yeah. How did you find that one out?
I know stuff.
It's actually funny because I was out for drinks last night with my former boss from Kids Bop, the guy that actually picks all the music they record, and he's the one that by himself rewrites all the lyrics to make them kid-friendly.
Wow.
And I had drinks with him last night. But I was their social media intern, and then that was my first – I got hired as like their content strategist right out of college. So I worked at Kids Bop for about a year, and I ran all their social stuff, all their digital marketing stuff. And it actually really helped because that was kind of like the launching pad to the job and the career that I have now. But that was a very interesting time for me. I think I was like 21 or 22, and it was working on a brand that has like one of the most negative brand sentiments on the planet. People are not fans of Kids Bop. And that was an interesting experience.
But to be fair, Kids Bop does very well out there.
Kidz Bop is one of the most successful musical acts.
There you go.
Since Billboard has been tracking music.
There you go.
It's incredibly successful. And they turn out one every 6 months. So it's like a, it's a factory where they're just turning out these albums, and they're always either number one or number two. They have like 20-something top five albums. It's absolutely insane how successful they are.
I'm still on the image of a Kidz Bop factory. That's wonderful. It's wonderful. I love it. All right. Well, let's talk about DoSomething.org. Now, as a gay man in my 30s, I, of course, have to know about Do Something, because you can't be a gay man in your 30s and not worship Andrew Hsu at one point in your childhood. So, but it is my impression that perhaps Do Something now is a little different than it was then when we were desperate for him on Melrose Place.
It's a very different organization now. So Andrew Hsu started Do Something when he was on Melrose Place, and his vision and goal, and I still think it is a vision and goal of the organization, is to make volunteering as cool and as accessible as possible. And during the Aaron Spelling heyday, we would have these PSAs at the end of, like, you know, 90210, Melrose Place, all these like major shows. When Aaron Spelling kind of retired and the shows, you know, were no longer in the air, Do Something was kind of thrown into turmoil because there was no more marketing mechanism. And at that point, they were trying to do all the stuff where they were more focused on being on the ground in schools. And the organization basically went bankrupt. Not basically, like, it did go bankrupt. And they hired Nancy Lublin, who started Dress for Success, to come and try to rebrand and fix and bring the organization back to life. And she introduced kind of all the models that we use today of this idea of a membership model. So what we do now is we're a membership-based organization where we consider someone a member, any young person that we have their email or mobile number so we can contact them directly with cause opportunities.
Nice.
And when I started, we had maybe like 100,000-ish, and now we're about to hit 5 million. So we've really found a lot of success in that model. And what we've done is we've taken away this idea of Do Something needs offices in, you know, X amount of key markets across the country. Everything is centralized here in one office in New York City. But because of the internet, like, you know, DoSomething.org is what Do Something used to be. So we switched to this internet-based model. And at the time, the internet was like still like this very new, cool thing. And
right.
Nancy had this vision of, yeah, like, kids are going to use the internet. Like, let's just do everything on the internet, save a ton of money from, you know, having all these on-the-ground offices everywhere. Like, we had an office in L.A. We had it. They wanted us to open offices in, like, Kentucky or all these different, like, key markets for, you know, different interests. She's like, no, let's put everything in New York in one office, and we're going to shift everything to the internet. And then we were having all the success, and we were seeing, like, we did this campaign every year with Aeropostale called Teens for Jeans, where the number one thing that young people request when they're in a homeless shelter is a pair of jeans, which most people don't think about.
Right.
Because a lot of people have this image of someone experiencing homelessness and they're not going to school, or, you know, they're not living a normal life. I mean, these kids still go to school every day. These kids still, you know, go to all these functions and stuff. And one of the things that gives you the sense of normalcy is jeans. And you can wear jeans several days in a row without having to wash them. And no one's going to be like, what, are you poor? Like, you wore those jeans yesterday. Like, I'm wearing a pair of jeans right now that I've probably worn for a week straight without washing. So the whole idea there was that, you know, we went to shelters and we said to them, like, you know, what is something that people always request but you never get enough of? And they said, jeans. So we started doing this campaign with Aeropostale every year. But at that point, we weren't collecting information from the kids doing it. But we had kids going into Aero stores dropping off jeans, and Aero would be like, this is amazing. You know, we collected 1 million pairs of jeans this year. And we were like, wow, we wish we knew who these kids were doing this stuff so we could, like, reach them better. So that's when we started switching to, okay, like, there's a campaign. Now you can sign up for the campaign. So now we know, like, where do you live? What age are you? Like, what interests you the most? And from that point, we get really smart about data. We have one full-time data scientist on staff that really just drills into everything so we can figure out, okay, like, what is it that young people care about? How can we get them out doing what they care about in really accessible ways that are open to absolutely everyone across the country? And then we can just get smarter and better. And so, like Teens for Jeans, I think we just kicked it off again. I think this is year 7. The marketing team is going to kill me because I should know all these stats. Oh, man.
It's all good.
We've collected over 5 million pairs at this point.
Yeah,
this is
wow.
This blows over 2/3 of the youth population experience homelessness. So, you know, so that, like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So, we've just gotten... And I've been here now for almost 4 years, and just kind of seeing the evolution over the last 4 years has been, like, really intense. And just we've been a lot smarter, and I don't think any other organization does what we do at the scale that we do it, like, you know, with 5 million kids simultaneously on a weekly basis. So it's just really cool to work in a place where you can have so much impact and affect so many lives.
Amazing. Amazing. Now, I would imagine as the chief growth officer, you're dealing with various different type of metrics and the quantitative piece. Talk to me about the qualitative piece, because I would imagine in addition to all of the numbers that are out there and how you guys measure how many folks you're reaching, you also have that opportunity to hear some of those stories about how DoSomething.org is making a difference. What's one that stands out to you that you draw on for inspiration of something that's happened?
Oh, there's so many amazing kids. Cause we call them report backs. Whenever a kid, like they'll take a photo of the action they did and they'll send it to us and they tell us, you know, why they did it, who it affected. There's been so many incredible kids because we get literally millions of these a year. But I think there was this one girl that did Teens for Genes 2 years ago, and she, her own house burned down in the middle of the drive that she was running.
Wow.
So she was temporarily homeless, and she didn't stop the campaign. She kept doing it. And at the end, she was, you know, one of the biggest drives that, you know, we had seen that year was this girl that had lost everything herself. She lost absolutely everything that she owned in the house fire. She didn't have anything to her name at that point. And she never stopped to help other people. She just kept going. And we actually flew her out to New York because her story was so amazing. And we had her at our gala 2 years ago because it was just like, wow, this girl is like so selfless.
Yeah.
And we just have, you know, we do a program with Foot Locker every year where we give away $20,000 scholarships. And the kids that get those scholarships, I mean, they have the most incredible stories you've ever heard. They all deserve, like, biopics. I don't even know. Like,
yeah.
These kids are so incredible. Like, you're talking about, you know, kids that are refugees or kids that, you know, experience some kind of incredible adversity. Because I think this year I spent all of Christmas going through applications. I think we get something like 40,000 this year.
Wow.
So when you get that many applications, you know, finding only 20 is so hard because you get so many just incredible kids. So for me, it's just like the coolest thing about DoSomething is that we don't do awareness. Everything has to have impact.
Yeah.
So awareness comes with the impact that you're doing, but we don't want to stop at awareness. So it's really cool to say, like, okay, you know, if we do the clothing drive, the Teens for Jeans, like 2/3 of the homeless youth population. If we do, you know, we do something every year to fight isolation that elderly people might experience, where we teach, we call it the grandparents gone wired. And I always mess up and say gone wild, because like that's obviously like it's a riff of that, but it's like not grandparents gone wild, grandparents gone wired. To battle isolation and get them on tech, you know, get them using email, get them on Facebook. They have ways to communicate with their families. And we'll stop, you know, like, we'll go to actual senior centers and help these people as staff members to, like, you know, kick off a campaign. And then you'll add these people on Facebook, and they'll leave to this day, like, daily comments on your wall, and they'll sign them all because they don't realize that, you know, Facebook has your name is attached to every comment you make. They'll sign it like they sign a letter. It's just, like, so nice and so cute. And it's really cool working in an organization where there's a measurable impact.
Yeah.
So you're never guessing if what you're doing actually is making a difference. You know it's making a difference. Because everything we do is backed in research, and we say, okay, like, we know the impact of this action is this. And I've worked at other not-for-profits, and it's not like that. So that's like a really cool thing about DoSomething.
Well, and I would imagine that motivates you to keep going.
Totally. You know, you get letters from kids, you know, every single day that are just like, wow, like, you know, like, I had no idea this was even an issue, and now I'm so focused on it, and me and my friends are all doing something about it, and, like, I want to get more people involved, and I want to start a club in my school, and we have this really good kind of one-to-one connection, and the most effective way we found to reach young people is by text, and we text, I think, 3 million, roughly,
wow,
every single week, and there's a real person on the other end texting back. This guy named Freddie, a trans coworker of mine, actually, he came out as trans via text to, like, 2.5 million people.
Wow.
Which I think is one of the most massive coming out ever.
I think so.
They're all like, you know, how are kids going to react to this? Like, you know, is this going to be cool? Are we going to get, like, a lot of hate? Are they going to be supportive? And people were overwhelmingly supportive. So it was really cool to see, and it was such a major moment for Freddie, too, to be able to share his story with that many young people. And we saw so many people, you know, just asking questions and having us then be a resource for trans education as well. So it's just like the stuff we get to do is so cool here. And it's a cool place to work. Everyone I work with is awesome. And I'm happy every day I wake up and I come into the office.
Oh, it's so great. Now, if our listeners were to stroll on over to DoSomething.org, which everybody needs to do, and they scroll to the bottom of the page, I'm not going to lie. There's two words there. You can click on a link called Old People. After I was able to work through my angst about whether or not I fell into that category, it's actually an amazing page to build some allies there.
Yes, and if it makes you feel better, I'm also an old person.
Okay.
By swimming standards.
Okay.
Once you hit 25, it's codenamed old people, and I feel like now that I'm 27 now, and I'm one of the older people in the office, which is really funny. Do Something is a very interesting organization where we our revenue stream for Do Something is different from a lot of organizations because we don't typically have individual donors. Because our members, you know, even though we have 5 million of them, they're teenagers. So we don't do any kind of donation campaigns. We do have campaigns where we do a big sale or something like that, and then that revenue goes to another organization or, like a shelter or something, someplace that needs that. But the way that we really work is that we work with large corporate partners like Aeropostale, like Foot Locker, like CVS. We just launched a campaign with them today about smoking, and we work with them to do these kind of massive national, now international campaigns. We're launching 2 new countries this quarter, hopefully, I don't know if I'm allowed to say, so I won't say, but 2 very exciting countries in this quarter, and our eye is really on global now. We've expanded global a lot. But so we work with these big, awesome corporate partners that trust us and know that we know how to reach young people and know how to drive impact and do these massive campaigns. So we love, though, if anyone is over 25 and listening, we would love to start making some individual donors because we really, by not-for-profit standards, like we're really kind of behind on that.
Yeah.
Because we're in this odd place of, you know, our members are teenagers, we never want to ask them for money. But any adults listening or anyone that, you know, works at a corporation that wants to do some awesome cause campaign, definitely hit us up. We're always willing to talk. We love doing this stuff. But yeah, there are some really great resources there too, just on like if you just want to learn more about stuff under the old people tag. But I am also an old person, so don't feel too bad about it.
So to be clear, you guys are not turning down the donations.
No, I am arms wide open donations, as long as you're not a teenager.
There you go.
I'm not allowed to ask you to donate.
Got it. All right. I have put together some Calvin ephemera that I have dug up online. I would love to get your reaction to some of these. You ready?
Oh, God, I'm scared, yeah.
just some, you know, off-the-cuff reactions. First, I learned all about one-second wins.
Yes, that is so important.
As much as I appreciated it and I learned about it, I also felt really overwhelmed by it and kind of shut down emotionally. So I got a little nervous that I can't satisfy the one-second wins.
Well, the one-second win just means, you know, we used to be in an era where you had like 30 seconds to capture someone's attention with a spot on TV. And now, especially with young people, there's so much happening that you really need to say, like, how can I put out, if it's like an image, if it's a piece of text, how can I put out something that someone can just look at and go, snap, I get it. Like, what brand message are you trying to send across? If there's a call to action, what's going to incite people to actually take that call to action?
Yeah.
So how can you create this content that elicits, you know, whatever success looks like for you, and you can define success however you want for every piece.
Right.
How do you actually get there? And how do you do that in 1 second? So how is your stuff so crazy good that you can get there and get it across in 1 second?
So much pressure. So much pressure I'm feeling with this.
You need more than 5 words to describe something that is too complicated.
Yeah, I'm screwed. Okay, two more items to get your opinion on. I'm seeing you do have an affection for certain members from One Direction. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, just Zayn.
Okay.
Former members of One Direction. I love Zayn. I love Zayn so much. My wallpaper on my iPhone is Zayn. My work computer is covered in Zayn stickers. Every Secret Santa I've ever had in the office gives me Zayn items. Like this Christmas, I got a pack of Strawberritas, which I also love. Those like really horrible Budweiser margaritas in a can. They're awful, but I love them. They taste so good. Someone replaced all the berries on them with photos of Zayn's face.
Wow.
And called them like Zayn burritos.
Wow.
So I always get like Zayn related presents from everyone I know. I've loved Zayn since One Direction first formed, and I was watching YouTube clips of them because it was X Factor UK and you couldn't watch it in America.
There you go. And the last item, I'm also seeing some sort of affection for Yankee Candle.
So the Yankee Candle thing started as a joke, but I actually really do love it because, you know, being from New England, my mom is like a huge, they're called Fandals, like fans of Yankee Candle.
Oh, yeah.
My mom would always drive us to the big Yankee Candle factory in Massachusetts.
Oh, I know it.
That, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
So she would bring me, and then my favorite thing was to, like, the make-your-own-candle area, where you would just have, like, all the buckets of different wax you could dip some, like, Santa, you know, shaped candle or some Christmas tree-shaped candle in. So we do that all the time. So I really grew up with Yankee Candle all over the house, and I always got my mom them for Christmas. And then Yankee Candle released this line called, like, Barbershop or something, and it was scented like a hot dude. Like, all the scents were, like, aftershave and stuff like that. So I tweeted them, like, as a joke, not thinking anything would happen. I was like, send me, like, the hot dad candles. And they're like, okay. So they sent me a package of all the candles. And then from then on, I kind of established this relationship with them where today they sent me a candle with my face on it.
Wow.
Which I think is, like, peak surreal. And everyone at the office has been taking photos with it because it's just so bizarre that there is now a candle that has my face on it.
With what scent?
It's like balsam fir, I think.
There you go.
I told them I wanted something similar to the scents of the Barbershop collection because they don't make it anymore.
Okay.
Because, you know, they have 20,000 scents. So they always go in and out of them. So they send me balsam fir. It smells really good. I'm afraid to burn it, though. I kind of want to save it as a memento.
Of course. Of course. And by the way, listeners, lest you all be scoffing, the Yankee Candle Store in Massachusetts, and I think it's like South Deerfield or something, it's no joke. That's a real thing. And the restaurant there, I'm going to remember, Chandler's Restaurant. It's like a real thing and hard to get reservations. It's really good in there.
It is. And people don't understand how big this place is. It's like acres large. It's massive. It's huge. You always see it when you drive by 91.
Oh, yeah.
It's like absolutely huge. But yeah, we would go there. It's like, that was like the fun trip as kids, which is how my mom should have known I was gay, that I was excited to go to the Yankee Candle Factory. But
it's kind of the universal barometer. That's kind of how we figure that out. All right. Well, we close with you. We are ready for your patented inspiration. I mean, this is what you do every day. You are working with youth. You are getting them involved. For all of our listeners out there who want to get involved, you know, and get youth moving and get them active and get them volunteering, how can you start everybody out?
We should have information. When you click on old people, there should be information there to also volunteer yourself.
Yeah.
And also, we always ask, you know, like, if you, adults in the lives of teenagers are very important. So, you know, if you're an adult and you have any teenagers that you're close to, obviously, like, preaching the gospel of DoSomething.org, letting them know about it if they don't already know about it. You know, suggesting campaigns that mean a lot to you. So, you know, we have 240 active campaigns on the website. So anything from like HIV AIDS, to homelessness, to poverty, discrimination, even like pet obesity is an issue that a lot of kids are passionate about. So there's a campaign about that on there.
Nice.
There's something for literally everybody. So just like, you know, finding the stuff that you think really resonates with you. And of course, like, you can do it too. Like, one of our most popular campaigns is called Soup Something, and it really outlines how to get involved in your local food bank, like how to serve at a local food bank when it's not Thanksgiving, right? Because Thanksgiving, everyone wants to go. Everyone's there. The day after Thanksgiving and the day before, that's when they're always looking for people.
Right.
So it actually has a location finder. So you can put in your zip code. It'll hook you up with a place that's closest to you. You can actually volunteer there. So we're all for, you know, people of any age volunteering. And I think that's what's so great about Do Something is that we make it as accessible as possible so you don't have to, you know, spend any money to make this impact. But we see, you know, parents doing stuff with their kids all the time. We see teachers leading the charge in classrooms all the time with their kids. So there's just so much in there. And I know that the world is kind of so overwhelming. There's so much going on. It really helps you figure out, like, okay, like, I'm really passionate about this cause, but what the hell can I do to make a difference in that cost base? You can go to Do Something and find a campaign that, you know, you will see and will even tell you what the impact actually is, like, and why you're doing what you're doing, like, what difference it actually makes. So, yeah, just, like, checking out the website and seeing what really lines up with your interests and anyone that you're close to.
And, by the way, how about a shout-out to your own Twitter account? Go for it.
If people want to follow, I don't know why people follow me, to be honest, on Twitter, but it's R-O-S-A-N, it's A-U-R-O-S-A-N. I basically just tweet about Zane. And the last, like, 2 days, you can tell I've been going through resumes because all my tweets are, like, complaining about these resumes. We get, you know, like, oh, my God, we get so many applicants for everything, and I'm trying to find my intern for the semester, and it's been rough. So right now my Twitter looks a little bitter. Normally it's just, like, me tweeting about men I find attractive, but which is great because, of course, my boss follows me, and she's like, what are you doing tweeting this? But it's a good time. Yeah, my Twitter is interesting.
You got Margaret Cho following you.
Do I?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't even know. I get excited because someone's following me, and then I check like a week later, and they've unfollowed me because they can't deal with me anymore. Like, I don't know if you watched The Great British Bake Off.
Yes.
The super hot guy just followed me from that. That really handsome Indian guy just followed me, and I was so excited. I was like, oh my God, I'm so afraid he's going to unfollow me, because he only follows like 177 people. Which means, like, I'm going to be on his feed way too often. He's going to be up. It's so annoying. But I did DM him, and he DM'd me back, so I feel pretty good about it.
Let's just say, at the time of this recording, Margaret Cho is following you. But she might, we don't know. She could be a Bath & Body Works candle person, and now she's seeing this Yankee candle thing, and she's going to unfollow you. I don't know. I don't know what fuels this. I don't know. Listen, everybody. Everybody listening needs to stroll on over to dosomething.org. There are so many resources there. This is the actual work. This is getting people out there using their voices to make a difference. I'm so inspired by you, Calvin. It's so great. You know, doing this show for so many years, we actually have only had, I shudder to put out there how many guests we've had, certainly under the age of 30. And as a college professor myself, it's so important that we have guests like you who are out there with your energy and with your expertise and just putting out there, hey, everybody can make a difference here. And you certainly are doing that. It's a great way to start out our year. Very inspiring stuff, man.
Thank you so much.
DoSomething.org. Thanks, Calvin.
Thank you.
Written in these walls are the stories that I can't explain. I leave my heart open, but it stays right here empty for days. Told me in the morning she don't feel the same about us in her bones. Seems to me that when I die, these words will be written on my stone. And I'll be gone, gone tonight. The ground beneath my feet is open wide. The way that I've been holding on too tight, with nothing in between. The story of my life, I take her home. I dive all night to keep her warm in time. It's frozen. The story of my life, I give her hope. I spend her love until she's broke.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have tons of time left on this week's episode, so let's get to all of the latest LGBT news that's out there. The Advocate magazine has just released their 2016 Queerest Cities in America. The Queerest Cities in America 2016, released by The Advocate. This is what went into creating this list. Okay, this is their technical specs for determining the queerest cities in America. These were the criteria. Number one, LGBT film festivals. So whether that was present. Number two, non-discrimination protections in adoption. Number three, I just am entertained by this. You have to see the humor in this. Number three, musical tours. You get 1 point for each tour of Janet Jackson, Ariana Grande, Carly Rae Jepsen, and Madonna. Criterion number four, do they have a chapter of the National LGBT Chamber of Commerce? Criteria five, do they have an openly queer mayor? Criteria six, workout. You get 1 point for each Soul Cycle Studio, Barry's Bootcamp Studio, and Sean T. Beachbody event. I don't even know what most of those are, and by that I mean I don't know what any of those are. Criteria 7, LGBT sites on the National Register, you get 1 point for each of those. Criteria 8, gay bookstores. I love gay bookstores. I miss the Oscar Wilde bookshop in New York City. I miss it because I'm no longer in New York City. I also miss it because it closed. So gay bookstores, really not so many left in the U.S., but you do get points for gay bookstores on the criteria list. For the queer cities in America, only two more criteria. Criteria number nine, places with landmarks that went rainbow for marriage equality. You get 1 point for each of those locations. And criteria number 10, are there viewing parties for Scream Queens and American Horror Story? The raw score is then divided by the population to provide a ranking based on a per capita LGBT quotient. Those are the criteria for determining the queerest cities in America. So this is what they came up with. I'm just entertained by this. Number 15, Berkeley, California. Berkeley, California, the number 15 queerest city in America. I've never been there. Very academic there. I enjoy all the great things I hear about Berkeley. Number 14, Manchester, New Hampshire, which I have been to. We called it Manch Vegas. That was an experience. Number 13, Waterbury, Connecticut. Number 12, Eugene, Oregon. Number 11, Rochester, New York. Rochester, New York, the 11th queerest city in America. Number 10, Boulder, Colorado. Number 9, right by my parents, Edison, New Jersey. Edison, New Jersey, the number 9. Very curious. Number 8, Salt Lake City, Utah, which we've talked about Utah quite a bit on this show, and I dial back a few episodes by going to thisshowisogay.com, and you will get our interview with the Equality Utah executive director there. Incredible stuff happening in Utah. Number 7, San Francisco. There it is. San Francisco, California, there at number 7. Number 6, the very expensive place to live, Washington, D.C. So is San Francisco, but Washington, D.C., the number 6 queerest city in America. Number 5, New Haven, Connecticut. Yale land. Number 4, where my sister is currently living, St. Louis, Missouri. St. Louis, Missouri. Number 3, Cambridge, Massachusetts. A lot of these are academic-related places. Number 2, Inglewood, California. Inglewood, California. And the number 1 queerest city in America, according to these criteria, Hartford, Connecticut. Hartford, Connecticut. Never would have guessed. So I know we have a lot of listeners in the Northampton, Massachusetts area who are probably, number one, miffed that they are not one of the queerest cities in America, which I just can't believe. And number 2, they're pretty close to Hartford and wondering, really? Hartford, the number 1 queerest city in America. But that is according to The Advocate magazine. You can check that out on advocate.com. In legal news, the Supreme Court will not hear the appeal of a woman seeking parental rights regarding a child conceived during a same-sex relationship. Peggy Willis argued that Florida's ban on same-sex marriage prevented her from becoming this child's legal parent. Her former partner, Anne Marie Mobley, gave birth to a baby through alternative insemination while the couple were together. Their 11-year relationship ended when the child born from this procedure turned 1. A federal court in 2014 ruled that Florida's ban on same-sex marriage was unconstitutional. Citing the 2015 Supreme Court's decision, Willis argued that her constitutional rights had been violated by a Florida state court, which had ruled she had no parental rights regarding the child. However, the Supreme Court let this ruling stand. As it is one of the criteria in the Queer Cities in America quotient there at theadvocate.com, the non-discrimination protections in adoption, that is still a frontier that needs a ton of work in the U.S., and this case in Florida just proves that right there. In sporting news, FIFA, the soccer governing body, FIFA fined Argentina, Chile, Mexico, Peru, and Uruguay this week for anti-gay chants by their national team's fans. The insulting chants came during qualifying matches for the 2018 World Cup. That's according to FIFA. Chile's fine is the biggest at 70,000 Swiss francs, which is also $70,000 because there's a franc-dollar pretty much equal ratio there. That was over cases at 4 different matches. The governing body imposed fines of $20,000 on Argentina, Mexico, Peru, and Uruguay. Proceedings continue against Honduras for what FIFA described as apparent homophobic chants by its supporters. The fines were imposed despite FIFA for several years insisting that financial sanctions alone were not enough for discriminatory cases. This is actually a really big deal that FIFA is stepping up and saying, no, you cannot just chant homophobic things at your soccer matches without penalty. And indeed, there are now penalties for all of these different countries where their fans were making very discriminatory and horrible, horrible chants. So there you go. That's in the world of athletics. Turning to the world of politics, Every week brings with us another Ben Carson update, and this week is no exception. During a rambling interview on a Catholic TV show monitored by Right Wing Watch, retired neurosurgeon turned presidential candidate Dr. Ben Carson, he dismissed transgender civil rights as, quote, garbage and silly. He called them garbage and silly before repeating his warning that marriage equality could lead to the legalization of polygamy and the destruction of America. He said this, quote, "We are absolutely destroying ourselves because we are paying attention to political correctness." He told this to Matthew Frank of the Witherspoon Institute, which is a right-wing think tank backed by the Anti-LGBT Family Research Council. Carson referred to LGBT protections from discrimination as, quote, extra rights, and described trans folks as, quote, a few people who perhaps are abnormal. This is a doctor. This is a doctor who's describing trans folks as, quote, a few people who are probably abnormal. He then continued to dismiss equal protections for LGBT people. He said this, quote, "You see how silly this is. I mean, it's beyond ridiculous that you take the most abnormal situation and then you make everyone else conform to it. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. That's one of the very reasons that I've been an outspoken opponent of things like gay marriage. I don't have any problem with gay people doing anything they want to do." Which, except for get married, I guess. "You know, it's a free country. There's freedom of association. However, when you now impose your value system on everybody else and change fundamental definitions and principles of society, I have a big problem with that. Everybody is equal. Everybody has rights, but nobody gets extra rights. And when we start trying to impose the extra rights based on a few people who perhaps are abnormal, where does that lead?" So, that is a quote from Ben Carson. In that quote, I want to read one more time, he said, "Everybody is equal, everybody has equal rights, but nobody gets extra rights." So somehow, Ben Carson is not seeing that right now, LGBT people don't have equal rights. And when we pass these laws, when we pass these ordinances, it's not to give LGBT people extra rights, Dr. Ben Carson, but it's actually to level the playing field so that they can have the same rights as everybody else. Very curious that he does not get that. It's also very curious to have a doctor, a neurosurgeon, just saying that trans people are a few people who perhaps are abnormal. I guess there's not going to be a huge point in talking about Dr. Ben Carson, we think, in the next couple weeks. With the Iowa caucus, the New Hampshire primaries coming up, he's not doing very well. He is sinking like a very, very heavy rock. So I don't know how much longer we're going to be talking about Ben Carson, but I suspect as he starts to sink, his rhetoric is going to get more and more intense. And it's not going to be pro-LGBT, we know that. So there, folks, is your weekly Dr. Ben Carson watch. You're welcome. In Texas, this is a governor saying this. Unbelievable story. Texas Governor Greg Abbott, who last year denounced the Supreme Court's marriage equality ruling, well, everybody, guess what? He has a new idea for getting around that and other matters of federal law he disagrees with. Abbott this week called for a constitutional convention of the states to consider 9 new amendments to the U.S. Constitution, including one that would let a 2/3 majority of states override a U.S. Supreme Court ruling, and another one that would allow such a majority to override any federal law, and another one that would require a 7-justice majority on the high court to strike down a democratically enacted law. So he's changing everything. He is changing the legislative system, he is changing the executive system, and by requiring a 7-justice majority, he's changing the judicial system. This is what Texas Governor Greg Abbott is spending his time on. Our neighbors in Texas know that this is what your governor is spending his time on. The amendments would also require a balanced U.S. budget and prohibit Congress from regulating any activity that occurs wholly within one state, a category some conservatives say includes gun use and marriage. Abbott made his announcement at the Texas Public Policy Foundation's annual public orientation in Austin. Texas media reports don't quote him mentioning marriage, but he is on the record as opposing the marriage equality ruling. He said this in a statement on June 26 last year, quote, "The Supreme Court has abandoned its role as an impartial judicial arbiter and has become an unelected 9-member legislature. 5 justices on the Supreme Court have imposed on the entire country their personal views on an issue that the Constitution and the court's previous decisions reserve to the people of the United States." So that is Texas Governor Greg Abbott, who has some ideas for reforming pretty much everything that we do here with regard to government. That's what he's spending his time on. In the world of entertainment, I love coming out stories. Charlie Carver, best known for his roles in Teen Wolf and The Leftovers. I've not seen The Leftovers. I have friends who are obsessed with The Leftovers, but I have not seen that. I have seen Teen Wolf. It's very enjoyable. But Charlie Carver, best known for his roles in Teen Wolf and Leftovers, he has announced that he's gay. He did it on Instagram this week. The actor penned a heartfelt essay that was split into 5 posts with the photograph of the inspirational quote, "Be who you needed when you were younger." Charlie Carver is 27 years old. He has played several gay characters on screen, but had not commented on his own sexuality until now. In those posts, he wrote this, quote, "As a young boy, I knew I wanted to be an actor. I knew I wanted to be a lot of things. It was around that age that I also knew, however abstractly, that I was different from some of the other boys in my grade. Over time, this abstract knowing grew and articulated itself through a painful gestation marked by feelings of despair and alienation, ending in a climax of saying 3 words out loud, I am gay." There you go. It's getting tons and tons of attention. It's gone all kinds of viral. That's Charlie Carver, actor who has come out on Instagram. A new way to come out. Back to the world of athletics. Love this story. Love it so much. You can watch this online. The crowd went wild at a recent Kings-Leafs game. Those would be hockey teams in Los Angeles, but it wasn't for on-ice action. When the infamous kiss cam landed on a gay couple and the pair locked lips, the Staples Center crowd erupted in cheers. Toronto native Brad Parr and his partner Andy Evans were reportedly the first ever same-sex couples to smooch on an NHL kiss cam. Parr told OutSports this quote, "It was a particularly sweet night since the Kings were playing and beat my hometown Toronto. My parents and siblings live in LA, but the rest of my family think I am a terrible traitor for being a Kings fan. I've lived in LA for 17 years. And everybody was tweeting this out. It's very, very exciting. In May, a gay couple was featured on the Los Angeles Dodgers kiss cam, a first for Major League Baseball. So again, if you want to get on a kiss cam, I think it's all going down in LA. It's all happening in Los Angeles. You should definitely watch the clip there. It's online. You can just search for gay couple smooches on LA Kings kiss cam, and you can hear everybody go nuts. It's very sweet. Very sweet to watch. Progress. Progress is measured in so many different ways. This is just one of the many ways that we can measure progress on a kiss cam. Another way, again, is when conservative people come out, which happens. Over in Scotland, Scottish Secretary David Mundell wrote on his personal website that it was time to acknowledge in public as well as in private who I am. The 53-year-old politician said he hoped that coming out would not change anything about how he was treated. He is believed to be the first openly gay conservative cabinet minister. Over there across the pond. A Downing Street spokesman said the Prime Minister was very pleased by Mr. Mundell's very personal statement and that it was very encouraging to see. Mr. Mundell, who has 3 grown-up children, wrote in his online post, quote, "New year, new start. I've already set out my political priorities for the year, and now I am setting out my personal one. Having taken one of the most important decisions of my life and resolved to come out as gay in 2016, I just want to get on with it, and now, just like that, I have said it." Mr. Mundell said that he had viewed the prospect of coming out as being, quote, "harder than standing for election, speaking in the House of Commons, or being cross-examined on television." Isn't that incredible? This is a lifelong politician who has done all of those things repeatedly. And he said the prospect of coming out was harder than standing for election, speaking in the House of Commons, or being cross-examined on television. He said he still cannot rationalize such feelings, but said that they were not uncommon, particularly in men of his age. He then added, quote, "Of course, everybody who gets to this point has had their own journey. I have certainly been on mine, conflicting emotions of doubts and fears, but ultimately positive and uplifting, with an unstoppable direction of travel. Over time, I came to understand that, for me, the only way to be truly happy on a personal level is to acknowledge in public, as well as in private, who I am." I love it. His announcement brings the number of openly gay politicians in the House of Commons to 33. That is now the highest proportion of any parliament in the world, according to a study by U.S. academics. So congratulations to Scottish Secretary David Mundell, who came out. More comings out, by the way. He's not the only one. Charlie Carver's not the only one. Over at CBS, that big network, CBS's new entertainment chief, Glenn Geller, told reporters this week that he wants to, quote, "normalize my diversity as the network's first openly gay president." He said this, quote, "We are always evolving. We are always changing. I'm just a gay guy from Indiana who doesn't play basketball. There is diversity at CBS. It exists in front and behind the camera. Can we do better? I think that we are." Geller has been with America's Most Watched Network since 2001 and said it is his hope to bring, quote, "my own sensibility and point of view to CBS." The executive, who told reporters that he is married, admitted to being a huge fan of reality programming like Survivor and Big Brother, but also appreciating comedies such as Mom and Madam Secretary, which he called the unsung hero of Sunday nights. I haven't seen that one. I watched The Good Wife. That's it for me. Colleagues have described Geller as a savvy programmer who looks for big tent-like shows that will appeal to large audiences. He is not the first broadcast president to talk openly about his sexuality. NBC Entertainment chairman Bob Greenblatt, who is also gay, said in 2011, quote, "I have never, ever been held back or questioned in any of my career steps that I've gone through because of my orientation, nor have I seen it with anyone else. I mean, I think Hollywood is very open. In all the executive positions, executive producers, writers, directors, I don't think there's any sort of negativity on that front at all behind the camera." So another congratulations to CBS's new entertainment chief, Glenn Geller, who just came out. There is a great op-ed hanging out over on advocate.com. It's called 5 Ways We Can All Help End Violence This Year. And it's a really important piece. This is by the new executive director of the New York City Anti-Violence Project, Beverly Tillery. We've had the previous executive director, Sharon Staple, on our show, I think a half dozen times, so we have to get Beverly Tillery on the show. She wrote an amazing piece, and we'll get her on the show to talk more about it, but she outlined 5 different ways that we can actually step up and do something to reduce violence and to end violence, and these different areas are, and she expands on them, so go read it, but the items are, 1, bring more attention to all forms of violence. 2, include the whole LGBTQ community. 3, broaden the coalition. 4, advance bold prevention strategies. And 5, work to change attitudes. And she writes so well on all of those. So check out 5 ways we can all help end violence this year. That's over on advocate.com. Our condolences to the family, friends, and fans of Florence King. Florence King, author, conservative essayist, satirist, and expert on the American South. She died this week at the age of 80 years and one day. An online tribute by her publisher Jack Fowler memorialized her with both considerable affection and truth about King's nature as a, quote, crotchety, gin-swilling, chain-smoking, off-colored prose perfectionist. The word curmudgeonly was also used by more than one writer to eulogize the woman who was defiantly independent, had no patience for piety, and despised phoniness. She died in an assisted living facility in Fredericksburg, Virginia, the state where she spent the last 30 years of her life. Although King wrote for influential conservative magazines like the National Review for a quarter of a century and almost right up until her death, she also boasted that she once wrote pornographic novels to earn a fast buck. calling her, quote, one of the most provocative and uncompromising prose stylists of her generation. The Post compared her writing favorably to that of journalism legend H.L. Mencken and feminist pioneer Dorothy Parker, but her publisher also recalled her throwing tantrums if an editor dared to challenge so much as a comma. She was ahead of her time in mashing together opposite positions that seemed to only make sense when she espoused them, such as how she identified herself as a conservative lesbian feminist. I love that. A conservative lesbian feminist. According to the Post, King once revealed that she was haunted by an intense love affair she once had with another woman who died at a young age in a car accident. She was said to have regretted spilling the beans about her private life out of distaste for the women's and gay rights movement. I have grown up knowing about Florence King. I've certainly read many, many, many of her words, and she holds this place in the LGBT community that a lot of people have a lot of different reactions about her. But if you've not read her words, her turn of phrase is just incredible, incredible stuff. So Florence King passed away at the age of 80 years and one day, and go check out her writing if you have never read her writing before. And finally, got to throw out a State of the Union shout out. President Obama had many words that supported the LGBT community in the State of the Union, but everybody's talking about that one woman who in no way got dressed up for the State of the Union. That would be Rowan County, Kentucky clerk Kim Davis, who somehow, and nobody knew how for a little bit, was invited to the State of the Union. So she went to the State of the Union. She got an invite. Reporter Ivan Caron of a French newspaper caught up with this Christian anti-marriage equality activist following the speech, and he had his cell phone camera set to record as he asked her if she had any thoughts. The conversation was pretty quick. The reporter said, "Hey, what are you doing here?" She said this, "I just want to be an encouragement." The reporter said, "To whom?" Kim Davis said, quote, "To all Christians who want to stay and make a difference." This was, by the way, right after the State of the Union. The reporter then asked, "What did you think of the president's speech?" And Kim Davis said this. This was a very nuanced review of President Obama's last State of the Union. She said, "It was a speech." Kim Davis was invited to attend the State of the Union by Representative Jim Jordan right here in Ohio. And in the strangest course of events, Representative Jim Jordan, he only learned his office had given the hottest ticket in D.C. to Kim Davis after he had denied doing so to a reporter. He then had to call the Huffington Post back because when they originally asked him, "Hey, you gave this ticket?" And he said, "No, we did not give this ticket to Kim Davis." And then he had to call the Huffington Post back and say this, quote, "Yeah, so we gave a ticket to, at the request of the Family Research Council, we gave the ticket to the Kim Davis family." Comments on Twitter as to what Davis wore, what appeared to be a knitted red, white, and blue cardigan sweater, her hair swept up and back, ranged from cruel to comical. I will say some of them were pretty funny. Some of them were really, really mean. Some of them were not nice at all. So I don't know what to say about that. There are folks saying, "Oh, don't say anything mean about her. That's just slamming people who are slamming us." I don't know about that. I don't know what business this woman had getting a ticket to the State of the Union. And by the way, yeah, she could have dressed a little nicer. That's just the way I was raised. That's not me bashing Kim Davis. That's Terry Schneck, my mother's voice in my head saying, "Hey, if you're going to go to the State of the Union, you should probably dress up." I'm just saying. Now, she would say that about going to Temple or going to the country club or going out to dinner. I just assume that my mother, Terry Schneck, would say the same about the State of the Union. So, Kim Davis, you could have gotten dressed up a little bit more. Just putting that out there. That, my friends, is it for this week's episode of This Show Is So Gay. Our huge, huge thanks to Calvin Stoll. If you have not strolled on over to dosomething.org, dosomething.org, there is so much going on there. They are doing incredible work to just translate all the different messages of civic engagement and volunteerism and getting youth out there actually doing something. They're doing incredible work, and you need to go support them and highlight them as a resource to all the youth in your life. So you know what to do. Get out there. Go make a difference. Go use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And while you're out there making a difference, while you're out there using your voice, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?